Freedom Fiends. This is the Freedom Fiends in Hour 1, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios, where we alter your locus coeruleus with warming, rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees to keep a sin flood of statism out of your brain. Can you feel it working? Can you feel it, Dan? Can you feel it, Katie?
Oh, of course.
Oh, yeah. Always. I can feel it. It's very strong.
A little bit.
Warming.
The voice is strong today.
Hi, Katie. Hi, Dan. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing well today. Thank you.
Absolutely.
In the
how are you feeling?
I'm doing pretty good. We narrowly missed having our motorhome. We're, for new listeners that don't know, Katie and Dan are in Scotland. I'm in the American South. And we had a series of out-of-nowhere storms that came through yesterday. And my wife and I live full-time RVers, so we move around the country and just kind of enjoy the freedom of staying out of the government's hair and keeping the government out of our hair. Mm. And we were in a campground in southern Alabama, or we are in one, and storms here come up out of the Gulf like out of nowhere. There's no warning. There's no the weather people say, oh, it's going to be nice with a slight chance of thunderstorm, and then tornado rips through or whatever. So that kind of happened yesterday. There was no official tornado. But the RV park that we're in, we saw on the internet, we saw the storm coming, my wife did, and said, hey, we need to bring in the awning and get things ready. We ran outside. It was like 5 minutes. We have our routine set. I mean, we can be literally asleep at night in our RV with everything hooked up, sewer, water, cable TV. We have a satellite TV, and we have all this stuff all hooked up. Wow. And sound asleep, wake up, and be on the road in like 20 minutes. We really have our routine set. And so she saw this storm coming, awesome. And she said, we need to bring in the awning and get things ready for some high winds. So we flew into action. Got the awning pulled in, got all of our stuff outside secured, got everything all ready, got in, got the dog taken care of because she panics whenever there's bad weather. And 50, 60 mile an hour winds ripped through, tore trees. As far as I know, none of the RVs around got flipped over anything, which happens sometimes. But one of our neighbors here in the RV park, one of the great big trees split right down the middle, which kind of indicates the way the tree split, it kind of indicates that there was, a tornadic activity because it sort of twisted the tree in half and brought it right down on the RV and just destroyed about a $90,000 RV. It was really, fortunately, the people were not in it when it happened, but, and it's really weird with something like that because it's like the wind comes through in like fingers where you have a strip that's maybe 30, 40 feet wide, and it just kind of rips everything apart in that strip, and then the next 40 or 50 feet, or 30 meters, as they might say, over in your world. It leaves that area alone, and then it just picks up again and just, shreds another one. It's kind of like the wind has claws, and it just drags it across the countryside. But our RV shook really hard at times, but because we had the preparation, because we were pulled everything in, secured everything, we literally got two tiny scratches on the outside of our RV from the situation, whereas the RVs around us, there's one, two, three, four directly around us that sustained probably $1,000 to $2,000 worth of damage each. And then one that was just slightly further away from us that it's a lost cause. It's probably $80,000, $90,000 RV that was just absolutely destroyed. And that's, that's kind of the fun. That's how it is.
That's what it is. It's all about. I would love a life like that. I think I really, really would. But I don't know. I'm kind of attached to these four walls at the moment, though.
Yeah, I think so at the moment as well. I kind of like our little base here. But yeah. I think that, I don't know. I actually think
there's something nice about that.
Kind of like
freedom.
The way you do it, like a retirement, sort of traveling around the US. Yeah. And that'd be nice.
That'd be awesome.
It would be fun, actually. And
yeah.
and we would bring in Canada because of your Canadianness.
Probably, I would want to try. I think I would want to see all of Canada, but that's just because I was born there and I haven't actually seen the rest of it. I've only really seen...
There's a lot of it, and there's a very low population, so what are you hiding?
I'm not...
Why is there such a large landmass and such a low population? You're up to something? I know you are, but you won't tell me. You and your dad, you won't tell me what you're up to, but I know it.
That's Dan's new conspiracy theory. The Canadians are up to something and we don't know why. I can tell you.
Is it not something like it's like we've got the like lowest population with the highest landmass in the world or something like that? There is something like that.
Well,
I'm not sure.
I think that that's true. It's like it's a huge, huge, huge country, but it's got a you know a lower population compared to say their you know southern
they're up
USA.
To something, Ben. I wouldn't trust them if I was down there with you.
The Canadian Lateral Commission, the Illumina Canadia.
Canadian. They keep blocking my research. They won't answer my emails.
Oh my.
No, I don't think there's anything going on there. I just think there's a lot of like mountains and ocean and stuff.
Is the
there,
stuff
Dan.
In the north not basically the Arctic?
Well, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, that's how I understand it.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say I think it's funny how the US own Alaska, but it's away up there.
It's kind of on top of Canada.
It's in Canadian territory, you know? Just above Saskatchewan or something, you know? I don't know. I'm just saying words now. Ben, please do go on.
Well,
I beg you, please.
My personal opinion is that, you know, Alaska is almost not like part of the U.S. in many ways. In ways it is, you know, language, commonness and things like that. But, you know, the culture and everything... I really don't see why they didn't years and years ago just tell the U.S., you know, if you want us, force us, bring your military up here and force us, but we're going to not be a part of you. But, you know, that's not necessarily always successful. Secession is works sometimes. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's really, you know, bad. Results are bad. Mm. But, you know, there were moments when the U.S. government was weak enough. I think Canada could have pulled it off. On the other hand,
they're just too polite, Ben.
Well, in the Washington D.C. government, you know, since the days of Washington has just been savage monsters. They really are a dangerous lot. But yeah. Anyway, but
any government is surely
true. I'm playing with my sound levels here. This is as Michael likes to say, this is a teaching hospital. And I'm seeing that my sound is maybe not as high up as it should be for the radio, and I'm kind of overblasting with your guys. So I think I've got mine fixed. If you guys could talk just a little bit, I'll see how yours is going.
Well, I'm just looking at our computer here. Dan's Googling a couple of things. It's interesting.
Yeah, Canada is the world's second largest country, after Russia being the first one and the USA is being the third. Despite the fact that the USA is slightly smaller than Canada. Canada has 33.8 million and people, and the US has over 300 million.
Well, there you go. See, that's what I mean.
It's
like
smaller than Canada.
There's a lot of mountain area, you know, and water and stuff. You know, there's a lot going on in there, Dan. It's big, okay?
You get big mad lakes, don't you? Do you know how, like, big, huge lakes, like big, ridiculous lakes?
We don't call them ridiculous.
It's like Loch Ness on acid or something.
At Hannison Lake. It was lovely.
That's not even one of the really big ones.
Hannison Lake's not particularly large. Anyway, I don't know.
That's just the nostalgia for you.
I'm just saying, it's a bit of nostalgia for me, so don't get mean about the lakes, okay? Everybody likes a good lake.
I wasn't criticizing.
Sometime back, Google had a thing about Loch Ness where they actually have a... they took their little Google on the street guy, you know, with the camera that goes around driving around through streets, and they put it on a boat and zipped around on Loch Ness. Did you see that?
I did not, actually.
No, I haven't seen this.
You can go to Google.
I think we... Well,
go ahead.
Dan, make the TV into a computer. Make it Google.
So what am I searching for here?
Well, search for Loch Ness Google View. Would that be appropriate?
Probably if you just go to Google Maps and zoom in on Loch Ness and then just use the street view.
Oh, sure.
Right in the middle of the lake itself. And it should give you...
I think it was recent.
There's actually a recent campaign. I'm doing this while I'm talking, but there was a recent campaign to make Nessie, or the Loch Ness Monster, the national animal of Scotland.
Instead of the unicorn, which, by the way, I'm sorry to tell everyone, doesn't actually exist. So I think it makes our country look a little bit daft. I'm just saying.
The Loch Ness Monster.
But the Loch Ness Monster's Loch Ness not real either, Dan, so I don't know what planet you're on.
It could exist.
Well, actually, okay, the whole thing about it is that it's so deep, all right? And nobody really... There's only so far down you can go before the water pressure's you know, and I don't know.
Do you know that actually, I think, I'm actually looking at the street view now of it on Google Maps. I can't remember when I heard this fact, but I remember hearing, see, we went on a school trip and it was walking what's called the Great Glen Way, and you walk around Loch Ness and things, you know, you stop at hostels and it takes you several days to get there. And part of it is like, I remember someone telling us that you could, if you drained Loch Ness, you could like fit everyone in the world. Like at that time, we were told it inside it, like inside the area it takes up, which I thought was quite weird.
I'm looking at this Google Street View for Loch Ness, and I don't know. There's like a shadow in the water, I guess.
I think what they're trying to...
But Ben, should I be looking for anything specific here? Was there anything there? It is beautiful, though.
I couldn't find anything. I swam around with it, you know, and couldn't even see a fish. Yeah. It appears to me that the camera is like half submerged and half out of the water, so you can see like 2 feet into the water and 2 feet above the water or whatever.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Oh, Dan, I think we're going to have to explore this awesomeness.
Well, I remember when I was on said school trip, I remember that we were, we'd managed to sneak a couple of drinks at a pub without the teachers knowing at the time. And then we were like 16 and we were walking around Loch Ness, and it was so funny because one of us went, "There it is. It's Nessie. I can see it. And it was like this tiny fishing boat. We could see the guys on it, and we were like, it's obviously
he'd had
boat.
One too many. I remember that. I'd left school by that point, or else I think that would have been an awesome trip.
That was fun. We're gonna break away and go to the market, but stick with us. We'll be right back on the Freedom Fiends.
Talk about Nessie a bit more.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
That's us.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been using Block It Pocket and I love it. Block It Pocket protects your cell phone, tablet, or laptop from remote tracking and data theft. I've tested it. It works. Put your cell phone inside, call from another phone, and the phone in the Block It Pocket won't ring because all signals in and out are blocked. Avoid calls and texts at the wrong moment. Keep your location private. Protect passports and credit cards. Water-resistant, hand-washable, and stylish in many designs. Go to blockitpocket.com. That's blockitpocket.com.
On the radio, Freedom Fiends, Ben Stone with Katie Green and Dan Green, and I'm in the American South, and Dan and Katie are in beautiful Scotland, and we were talking before the break about Loch Ness and things that might or might not be real, like unicorns and Loch Ness monsters. And
Well, we were just talking about the fact, you know, okay, so... Before we were saying about the Loch and how this Nessie character, the Loch Ness Monster, as it's more known, could actually exist. And people
call it Nessie because we know it personally, you know.
Well, we know him. Okay.
He prefers Nessie.
No, okay, right. So I'm just saying, it's actually, I would like to think it's a female, but do you think it's a...
You haven't met him. You came here from Canada.
Oh, right.
See, when all Scottish children are very young, they get taken to meet the Loch Ness Monster.
Do they?
Yeah, that's what happens. Or Nessie, as we affectionately get to know.
It's a
Scottish initiation, but because you emigrated here from Canada, you were 12 and you were too old for it.
While the little haggis all spring around you. Someone plays bagpipes in the background. And you all run in kilts.
Yeah, that's the problem. You can't get away from it. Can I make a point, though, about, like, so the Loch Ness Monster could be real because it's true that we actually know more about the surface of the moon than we do about what's under the oceans, because like if you go to like the Mariana Trench, it goes 6 miles down.
Well, do you remember that episode of Death Clock? That episode of Metal. I can't even say Metalocalypse.
Because it is related to the Fiends.
Fiends-related. It's the bit where they're like, they have to record the most brutal album ever, and it's like, where do you do that? In the Marianas Trench. And it's just so good.
And then a weird recording something.
Oh, that's great. But it's true that it can go down so far. I mean, I've talked to people who go, well, that's not really true because we have shipwrecks and things. And I go, well, that's like one level of seabed. You know, a shipwreck could be a mile down. It could be 2 miles down. It really depends where it lands.
Underneath.
It can, but it can go, is it not, theoretically? So we're talking about the Marianas Trench. About is it six miles?
6 point something miles down.
Right. So at that point, we can't actually, as far as I understand it at the moment, we don't have...
The pressure is massive.
The pressure down there would just be too much.
You know,
so I don't know. I would have to actually research that. But it's an interesting theory that Nessie could have come from another part
Because Loch Ness leads out into the sea and ultimately to the oceans.
You know, with the ocean, too, even with shipwrecks, like I was reading, a few weeks ago, that a shipwreck had been discovered off the California coast. Now, this was a ship that was used as a very famous ship that was used at the Bikini Atoll when they tested the hydrogen bomb. It was actually, I think it was blown up twice, if I recall the story, and it didn't sink. And they hauled it back to San Francisco to Oakland, and they did a bunch of research on it, and the thing was sitting there, you know, it's already been through, I think, either one or two hydrogen explosions. And so they got everything that they could out of it that they needed to know, and they drug it out to the middle of the ocean and sank it. And then they lost it.
Wow.
And this is, they knew where they sank it, and they still lost it. And then
we lost that again.
And then they rediscovered it just recently. And, you know, they sent a submarine down there and took pictures of it and so forth.
Little scamp.
But but this is an aircraft carrier that they knew where they sank it, and they still lost it. So, you know, there's, like you said, there's so little we know about the oceans and about life and the universe. I like to say this. I kind of get aggravated sometimes. I like, you know, my wife watches TV. She watches food channels and stuff like this. And I try not to pay attention, but it's in the background, so I hear it. And the commercials come on, and they're, you know, the guy says, I know the commercials are different there in Scotland than they are here in the U.S. But we have this Larry, the fake cable guy, comes on, and he's fake riding a jet ski on a water. And you can tell that he's not really steering it because, well, anyway. And then he says, he's talking about antacids, you know, or overcoming, you know, acid indigestion or whatever. And he says, there's nothing better than being acid free. And I think, no, there's a lot of things better, you know, like not having cancer is better than not having an upset belly. I would, you know, I hate to talk in absolutes. I try as much as possible to not speak in absolutes. And that's what so many grand experts do. They say, well, there's no way this could, there's no way giant squids could exist. And then one washes up on the Japanese shore and they're like, oh, well, I didn't actually say they couldn't, but we don't know.
Well, it's like
there's more in heaven and earth than dreamt of in your philosophy.
Well, it's like Troy, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, they said that Troy wasn't real for God knows how long, and then eventually they had to.
Well, I kind of like to bring it at this point kind of back to government-y stuff. I'm just saying, like, see if we take that. Oh, well, I'll speak about it in the next bit because I hear music in my ears.
Katie hears music in
my
head.
Music. Do you guys hear it too? Just to clarify.
We'll be right back after this trip to the market.
Woohoo! Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Tiny little sliver of the population. Oh, yeah.
Right before the break, Katie was going to make a point there about the evils of government.
Yeah. Well, I just thought I'd bring it back, you know, to kind of a government place. Just to make the point that, you know, you were saying you don't like to talk in absolutes, Ben, and I think that's really good because I've heard people that come from a certain type of background, perhaps. They've never really seen the world. They don't know a lot about the world, but they think that because this little sliver of the population, this grand universe, thinks that perhaps somebody lived a long time ago and there's like a book about it. People sometimes, you know, like Christianity or stuff, they think because they do it, it's like the only way. And I don't really get that. I don't understand how somebody can think, well, this is the only way. But there's it's so vast.
Well, you get confused, so, and then things. You could get all the way into Nietzsche and like perspectivism.
But government do that though. They're like, this is the way that things are done, and they don't give you many options about that.
Yeah, like this is a legal deal.
This
with
is
it.
An absolute. Anyway, I just wanted to bring it into that context. But I think Dan wanted to mention Nessie again because of his.
Well, Ben, do you have any thoughts first? I can always bring this in a bit.
Well, you know, on Katie's point, that's really kind of the essence of government. It's one small group of people, usually old men, and they've got in their mind what they think everybody should behave like, and they're willing to kill you or jail you forever or however long it takes to punish you until they're satisfied if you do what they don't like. And throughout history, this is mostly just arbitrary decisions. It's not like, okay, it's pretty obvious to all sane human beings that if you just go out and kill somebody, that's bad. We can't tolerate that in society. And it's pretty much universal. We understand that if somebody has something, you can be around little tiny kids that are like 1 year old and 2 years old and like that. And one of them is playing with something. And if another kid comes up and just takes it from them, they know instinctively that something's wrong. They have been wrong. This is not right. It shouldn't be like this. So theft is obvious. I mean, it's built into us. We understand that things like murder and theft, and we understand these things are bad. Without some government official writing on a paper, that's bad, don't do that. And yet, these government people, once they get the authority to enforce the don't kill, don't steal rules, then they start saying, well, you have to have grass in your yard, and it has to be within this length and no taller than this, and you can only have these plants growing in your yard, and you can't have those evil plants growing in your yard. And then pretty soon it's like, well, you can wear these kind of clothes, but you can't wear those kind of clothes, and you can wear your pants tightened in, you know, with a belt this way, but you can't wear your pants loose and sloppy and stupid-looking that way. And
oh, yes.
It gets to the point where
we will kill you if you do that.
Yeah, it gets to the point where a cop will take out a club and beat you to death if you're not wearing your pants correctly. And somebody might say, oh, but they look stupid wearing their pants like that. Of course they look stupid like that.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
But
it's their choice to look stupid.
Exactly. And you could say the same as Romans were marching across England, and they ran onto these, you know, naked blue warriors with, you know.
Oh, they couldn't deal with up here,
like,
then.
Ah, what's with these hippies running around naked, painted blue? We can't have this. We've got to kill them. I mean, that's the state mentality. How dare you be different?
These long-haired tattoos. Yeah. They were long-haired tattooed nutters, the Celts, and I like to think I'm continuing that tradition.
Dan is continuing that tradition of the Celtic people by having tattoos, long hair, and being mental.
Dan is naked and painted blue right now for your radio enjoyment.
Yes, he is. I did it during the break. So.
Actually, my parents took me to... like to visit like a lot of the old like places like Newgrange in Ireland, you know, a lot of the old pagan sites, and it's like one day a year on like it's one of the equinoxes in Newgrange in Ireland, like the sun lines up and it comes through like this. It's a really old sort of pre-Christian kind of temple. They've done it up a bit to restore it, but it looks a bit 60s. Now it looks a bit 60s, but inside you can still see the original sort of way it was. But yeah, so in this equinox, once a year, the sunlight comes directly through the chamber and like just right in the sliver of the door and illuminates like the whole chamber inside it. Wow. It was like an old sort of like pre-Christian.
Was that what I prefer to call heathen sort of.
that was a special time for them. It was a special celebration for them.
Was that how they did that? Predate any kind of calendar?
Well, it's actually people like the work of James Swagger in that you'll find that these temples and these megalithic sites in like Ireland, Scandinavia, Scotland, all these places are actually, a lot of them are astrologically aligned.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find, so they actually showed that it's so funny when I hear people talking about like our ancestors as if they were some sort of stupid people who just walked about smacking their heads going, we don't know what we've got to do right now. And then they realize they could build these things using very what we would now consider primitive methods, and they could completely astrologically align them. It's incredible.
I know.
Human beings.
You don't get that kind of architecture anymore. You just don't get it.
Human beings are amazing. And you know, we haven't changed significantly for a very long time. We have been the state that we're in, you know, physiological development. A lot of people, like Dan just said, a lot of people think of, even in using the Americas for an example, when the Europeans came to specifically to North America and they looked at the way that the native Indians were living and they thought, oh, those people, you know, they thought them to be backward and barbaric and everything. But the more we learn about the civilization that the North American Indians, especially the woodland Indians, the more we learn about that, the more complex their civilization was. And the more we understand that they were extremely inventive, they had developed things like, you know, planting corn and beans and squash, and they had an intricate commerce and roads. They actually had roads that just interlaced all of the whole eastern forest areas of eastern North America. And there were no centralized governments, or there were very few centralized governments. Most of that was all voluntary interaction. And this was something that really stunned the European invaders, because they would go into an area and they'd say, okay, we want to make a deal to, you know, purchase this land. We need to talk to your chief. And they would be like, it's not really a word that exists in Algonquin. What are you talking about? Or whatever, you know. And so whoever the local was, they would be trying to communicate with him that they wanted to talk to the boss. But there's little, you know, community bosses, but there's no king. There's no overriding government. So who do you make a contract with to take all their land? And there's nobody. So they would convince one small local guy that's maybe the small chieftain of a tribe of, you know, or a village actually of maybe a couple hundred people to sign an X on a paper. And then they claim, okay, now we own New York. But no, there are all kinds of people there who don't even know who that guy was who put his X on that paper. And this was such a strange concept to the Europeans that they couldn't grasp it. So they just assumed they were barbarians and assumed they were, you know, stupid and backward. And that gave them the excuse to kill them. But the reality is humans going as far back as we can find evidence for, going way back into the early Stone Age, they were developing jewelry, they were developing art, they were developing musical instruments. Advanced musical instruments, you know, flutes and harps and all kinds of things. Maybe it wasn't, you know, the perfect woodwinds that we have today in an orchestra, but it made music and it was beautiful. And so, you know, and they were problem solvers. They were as much problem solvers and engineers and artists as we are today. It's just that we have the luxury of living on the discoveries that they made, like fire and the lever and the blade and the hammer and all these things that build one thing upon the other to give us what we have. We don't have what we have because we're so much smarter than them. We have what we have because they were pretty amazing and they were pretty smart and gave it to us. And then we formed governments and enslaved ourselves and threw it all away.
And ruined it, as per.
But before we leave Nessie, I'd kind of like to make a point about.
Dad. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, in the Simpsons when Mr. Burns actually went to Scotland and he drained Loch Ness and he got Nessie, and then it's like that wasn't the bit for me. The bit for me that they really got right when it was like, you know, he took Groundskeeper Willie with him and he met his parents, and like they weren't looking each other in the eye and they were kind of going, so you're back then? He's like, aye, that you'll be away again soon. He's like, aye. And then they kind of never looked at each other again. And what's funny is they nailed that, because I've seen so many Scottish families that act like that. So I thought it was kind of funny that they absolutely belted it.
Spot on.
I haven't watched Simpsons in a long time. They kind of, for me, they kind of jumped the shark a long time ago. But back, you know, in the early years of Simpsons, they really nailed a lot of, they made a lot of social statements that were really valid.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's interesting what you were saying before as well, if we're talking about like how some Europeans, you know, I've said this on other shows, how like, you know, I've got blonde hair and blue eyes, and, but somehow I don't think, you know, you can look at European culture, you know, the kind of way the Nazis sort of tried to throw this all in together, like, it's almost like, oh, look at what they did in Europe with art and philosophy and music, and they did do great things, but then if you leave out things they did in other places, parts of the world, you know, things like Buddhism, Taoism, mm-hmm. you know, even Eastern, a lot of the Native American sort of the spiritual practices. Yeah. See, if you take all that out, it doesn't make any sense, you know what I mean? It's, Europe's not superior, it's just different, you know, because if you compare, say, pretty much like, you know, sort of East, like, Eastern sort of philosophy, which is oftentimes kind of more mystic, to sort of Western philosophy, which is oftentimes sort of more, it's more scientific, more mechanistic, if you know what I mean. And then you had these great philosophers like Schopenhauer, who was one of the first to get into Eastern philosophy and try and synthesize it with the Western philosophical model.
You always talk about him. You never shut up.
I love Schopenhauer. I love him.
Other
I
do. Sentence, I'm sorry. Dan goes, he was, you know, just Schopenhauer, and I'm like, yep. I know him. I know him well by now.
No, but it's true what you're saying, Ben. It's like, it's, they went over with this kind of stupid arrogance to America, you know, yeah. that was...
We know it.
Yeah, which was totally stupid, and it totally discounts, you know, their ways of living, which are equally valid, and probably in a lot of ways were better than some other ways, like some other
ways
that they
had. Well, without government, you know, like Ben was saying, private roads that they did, and there was no big, you know, chieftain, there was no king, but it was all done, it was all agorism, it was all, I mean, I don't know all the ins and outs, obviously, I'm just hearing about it now.
Are you there?
It sounds like, you know, a really nice voluntary state to be in. But
Murray Rothbard talks about 17th century Ireland as being quite libertarian, but I don't really know that much about it, to be honest. I've not got that
something
far
I'd like
back
to
in Ireland
into,
yet.
Be interesting.
Yeah, there's another guy who's done some really interesting stuff on Ireland that his name jumps out of my head, but maybe it'll come back in during our
you
journey.
You never know?
Yeah. While we're wandering away to the market, we're going to be right
the
back.
Market.
We're not going to disappear altogether. We will be back. And that's a... There,
I
I'm,
promise.
I'm making an absolute statement there.
Yes, well, okay.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
And I got the
recording. I know. I just, I'm a muddier.
Yeah, let's just finish the hour with that kind of rambling.
Who's doing the intro? Oh. It's not the intro yet.
We have redemption of the first hour, then we'll go into the second hour. And we're back with the Freedom Fiends. Ben Stone.
Hello.
With Katie and Dan Green in Scotland. I'm in the southern American states, down here in the deep south, where I always keep my feathers numbered for just such emergencies.
it's such a soothing voice.
You know, the South is really, this is really off topic. But the South really is, I've spent my life living between Appalachia in eastern Kentucky and eastern Ohio, and then some in western Ohio, and then the bulk of my life was in California and Nevada in the Southwest deserts down in there. And I never really spent any time in the deep American South until the last couple of years when my wife and I have been full-time RVers. And now, I mean, we've been all over the place, New York, New Hampshire, Vermont, Michigan, you know, Indiana, Illinois, Missouri, Arkansas, all over the South. And I'm absolutely shocked at how peaceful Southern people tend to be. And I hate to collectivize anybody, but I just don't see the stereotypes that the North and the West tries to paint of people in the South. They're really cultured, you know, is a good way to put it. Now, there is the infamous redneck culture here as well. And, you know, it's a very fun-loving party type of way of thinking. And, you know, you can they like to make fun of themselves as much as anybody else makes fun of them. But really, they're just, you know, they enjoy life. If you can say anything about the rednecks, you can say a lot of negative things and you can put stereotypes on them. But really, I think the best way to put it is they're just doing the best they can with what they've got and enjoying life as best as they can. And I think that's really all any of us can do, you know?
Of course.
Oh, I'd agree, yeah. And I'd like to start by apologizing for rednecks, because if you actually trace the term back, it actually goes back to, like, poor farmers who'd come from, like, Scotland and Ireland to the US. So what you now call rednecks are the descendants of people from here's kind of folk.
I've never
was it not that they were out in the sun?
That's true. That's
in the sun. And
they were called rednecks because they would get the extreme sunburn working in like that heat of like the South in America, which they weren't used to in this part of the world.
Now
you can look at It was the name given to like sort of poor farmers who were from this kind of origin, who were very white and stuff, and like the sunburn.
Well, Dan, you are what I like to call
I'm terrible.
You're Irish skinned, so you're pale and freckly,
but
you have a ginger beard. And you won't admit that it's ginger.
Well, that is kind of ginger. See, my two brothers are ginger, but I kind of avoided the ginger gene. I sort of skipped it for some reason. I'm not sure what reason, but I sort of...
But it's in your beard. It lives within your beard.
The other point is, now you're talking about like how, so there's that kind of culture, that stereotype about someone in the south of the US is like a redneck and they're stupid and stuff. The Mises Institute is actually located in Alabama, I believe, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's very close to where I'm at, actually.
Yeah. Oh, really? So that shows you, you know, that turns that stereotype on its head straight away.
It's just what, you know, I don't know what it is. I mean, when you watch kind of shows like we watched Saturday Night Live, that's quite a East Coast lefty kind of show. I mean, let's face it, it really, really is. Come on. Yeah. I'm just making a statement about saying it's good
it's
or bad. I'm just
saying.
But they make fun of like rednecks and stuff and they do all that. But they do try and paint them all as sort of gun toting, homeschooling nuts.
Nut jobs.
Yeah. Aye. But, you know, where I am pro-gun and I'm pro-home education, so I guess maybe I would fall into that category too. I don't know. but no, we kind of have a culture. We would call that more of a... I think every culture has their sort of rebels. They're sort of... you know, like here we have NEDs. We have non-educated delinquents. And we would say that. And they're sort of people that go around.
It's a kind of, what you're talking about is sort of different, because what you're talking about here is the kind of underclass. Like, it's like below working class, state sufficient people. So
would
that's
you call
I think
it that?
That's different.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there it is. We've never talked about that before. So that's the.
Are they offended?
We would disagree on that one.
Are they offended to be called Neds, or is that something that they embrace?
I hear people say stuff like "you yummy Ned," and it's used in a derogatory sense.
Because the redneck
culture,
some
of them say "I'm a Ned," you know, like some people.
The redneck culture embraces their redneckery. They're very proud.
Oh, like the redneckness.
Yeah, like Gretchen Wilson with the song "Redneck Woman."
Great song.
Remember,
I like Gretchen.
We're going to be back in the next hour, so stick with us. Stay. Don't let the news, you know, news is going to come in. Don't let that drag you down. We'll be right back with more good, fun stuff on Freedom Fiends.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
We'll be right back.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. I'd like to point out that the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license, and this allows reuse by anyone except for governments, and you can learn more about that at BIPCOT.org. I'm here with my partner in crime, Dan Green from
and
the
you're
Greenette
Katie
podcast.
Green.
I am Katie Green, yes.
Yes, and our podcast is also covered by the BIPCOT no government license. You can find us at greeningoutpodcast.com, and we are talking to Ben Stone, the bad Quaker.
Ooh.
And I failed in the first hour to mention the BIPCOT no gov license. How did I do that? It was literally on the script right in front of me, and I failed to read it. So Michael's going to throw a rock at me next time he sees me.
Ah! Is that what he does?
Not aggression principle.
Oh, dear.
Guys have the Greening Out podcast. What's the easiest way to find that on the inner tubes?
Either greeningoutpodcast.com or greeningoutpodcast.co.uk. The .com just redirects you to the .co.uk.
Yeah, so you know what? Just type in .com.
Yeah, we're also on Facebook and Twitter.
You half a second. Greeningoutpodcast.com. We like to look at things from a libertarian perspective, and especially from Scotland. It's quite different.
And we talk about a wide variety of subjects, from history and philosophy, economics. We've even talked to people like also true religious practitioners
Just whatever.
We talked to the guy that runs the Satanic Temple.
We did. That was fun. I enjoyed that one, actually.
We talked to everybody.
He was nice.
You guys talked to Walter Block.
No, I just like talking to people.
We talked
to him a couple of times.
Twice.
Yeah,
he's great.
How did you land
Walter Block?
He's
such a nice
Block.
Man.
We emailed him.
Know what it was? We just sent him an email at his university, and he was like...
Sure.
Yeah, fine. Like we sent them our what we were doing, and we'd actually in our resources page we'd linked up, lectures by him and things, and we sent him our website and explained who we were and what we wanted to talk about.
Well, he had a big effect on me. He was the defending the undefendable.
That was a big that book had a big effect on me. It was 72,
also,
I think that
a couple
out.
Of his lectures at a couple of universities or colleges in the 70s, I listened to them along with Defending the Undefendable, and I have to say that was it for me. That was that clinched it. I'd been sort of maybe a bit of a, I don't know, I was back and forth, on my beliefs and stuff, but Walter Block, he really helped me.
I think the thing I like about his lectures the most is his sense of humor. He brings you into the talk. It's not just 67 years ago. It's not like that.
he's funny.
He's funny. He looks at things in different angles that you're not accustomed to thinking of them. He makes you think about why it is you believe what you believe and what you really believe. And, he's a very intellectually stimulating but yet down-to-earth kind of a person. And the people that hate Walter Block and attack him all the time, it's like, the main thing that they say about him is that, he's against women or he's racist or whatever. And the only way they can make that accusation against him is by not taking the time to actually make an effort to understand what he's talking about. They hear three words of a sentence and assume they want to shove him into a description that doesn't really fit him and say, oh, well, there he is. He's anti-woman or he's racist or he's this or he's that. Or, I've heard it said about Walter Block that he's both. Well, you can't believe Walter Block. He's an atheist. And then somebody else says, well, you can't believe Walter Block. He's a theist. He's a Jew. Well, you can't believe Walter Block because... And it's like, wait a minute. Now, you can't say that he's both things at the same time, and that's why you can't believe him. That's just attacking a guy because you don't like him, not because you don't like his ideas.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, and the funny thing about Ron Paul was, when... Ron Paul, I'm just bringing in Ron Paul here because all these people had started to say when I think it was the Ron Paul letters or something came out that he's anti-Semitic and stuff. So then Walter Block, he started Jews for Ron Paul, like, because he was so then he started that to kind of like show the nonsense of that statement, because if you looked at Ron Paul, you know, he loved Ludwig von Mises and, you know, Murray Rothbard, both of whom were Jewish. You know, they were two huge influences on him, which is kind of silly. And I remember the first time hearing Walter Block on, it was on Red Ice Radio. I don't listen to that show anymore. I do not. but I used to. But and I remember at the time, it was when I was kind of transitioning and I was still quite left-wing and quite socialist, that I was quite enamoured with Trotsky. I can't even imagine now why I was, but I was at that time. And I remember hearing Walter Block talk about privatising everything, and I was immediately horrified, and I was angered, and I was like, and I thought, this is just nonsense. But I kept listening and I thought, this doesn't make any sense. It was the most horrible thing I'd ever heard. But then a few days later, when I'd actually been out like walking the dog in the park,
you
and thinking, like tossing it over in my mind, I was disturbed that it started to make sense to me. And it really actually, and then I was like, this makes a whole lot of sense what he actually just said. Yeah. And then, you know, you get the cognitive dissonance, then you have to accept.
If we're talking logic-wise, yes, but not a lot of people are willing to accept logic. They say, well, I'm an emotional person. I don't accept your logic. Mm-hmm. I go by emotion. And that's your choice. That's someone's choice to do that, you know.
No,
I remember having a conversation with someone recently where I was trying to explain that, you know, I'm not trying to push anything on you here. This is just what I think, you know.
But they act as if they are trying to push something on you.
Yeah, yeah, I know, yeah. But I know I really like Walter Block. Very nice man.
There's a lot of, going back to your guys' podcast, how many episodes have you guys done so far? Do you know off the top of your head?
No.
I think it's around about, I think about 30, we divide them up, so it's about 50 odds.
Together
because
for simplicity, Dan.
Yeah,
about
60, I think. Because we do some that's just me and Katie talking, and then we do some with a guest.
Well, we have Greening It interviews and the Greening It podcast, really. I mean, like,
we've started to call it Greening Out and Friends because we've had on people recently like James Burnett from survivalpunk.com and like MK Lords.
We've started to kind of, at first we were kind of serious, like, we have to fix the world, but you realize that you can't do that. So we just try and we like to talk about things in a conversational fashion.
And we start to have fun with it and just be like, yeah. And then
you have to, though.
I think that's how we kind of fitted into the Freedom Fiends, because we had the sort of same attitude.
The thing about the world is, and I don't mean to sound too bleak here, but my mother used to say, I think I've said this on the show before, if you don't laugh, you'll cry.
Yeah.
You know, when things are, I mean, the state of the world is not great. You know, I don't think any of us can say it's wonderful, but if more people keep putting things out there, maybe something might change, but who knows. But like I say, on the Greening It podcast, we're not trying to change
the world. We're not throwing the fear at you.
No. even though sometimes we do get a bit passionate about maybe hatred or dislike of a certain, maybe, you know, ideals, and maybe we do get a little bit
and it
too,
has intense swearing.
We swear like sailors, you know. I think that you call it,
drunken sailors
cussing
on fire.
Do you call it cussing or swearing?
You know,
here it's just known as sweating.
I make a distinction between, you know, an actual curse is a sort of a religious statement. And then there are what I consider vulgarities, which is using, you know, naughty words that usually reference some kind of bodily function. So I kind of have a distinction between those. When I was raising my kids, they knew I really didn't appreciate anything. Like, I think, without being too graphic or specific, let's say you use a word that references a deity and an eternal thing. And yet, at the same time, the person who is saying that, was that too vague? Or without hitting the censors, do you know what I'm saying?
Are you talking kind of iconoclastically?
I have no idea what that means. English, Dan.
If you make a phrase that starts with a G and then the second word starts with a D, that I have to be careful on American radio.
Oh, right, yeah, sure, yeah.
Oh, yeah, actually, that, yeah. I was told
Dan
to.
Dan made that mistake.
I made a mistake the first time I was on. Not the first time, one of the times
nothing.
I was on live radio, I said something with another word.
So if you do that, and the person who is making that statement is not actually religious, then it's kind of a nonsensical statement. You know, the essence of it requires a deity for that statement to make any sense. And so is that really what you intend to say with it, or are you just filling in words because you can't think of anything else to say? And then the other half that I refer to as just vulgarities, you know, if you're making reference to human bodily functions, then, you know, what are we doing now? Well, we're not offending any deities, and we're not condemning anybody to an eternity of anything. All you're really doing is using a shock effect with a questionable word in order to get somebody's attention. So, you know, in my day-to-day language, well, I spent a lot of my career divided. A good portion of my working career I spent among, you know, hourly, low-level hourly wage people who were really working hard for a living and so forth. And the language that they used was completely different than the people that I was exposed to when I was in the engineering world, which were highly educated, and they were constantly attempting to explain what they wanted to say in as complicated words as possible because of their love for accuracy. And so they just didn't use vulgarities or cursing. And part of it was that it was frowned upon in, you know, in the more educated circles of engineering and so forth in the aerospace industry. They kind of looked down on the hourly people that used vulgarities regularly. And I think that was, I was never really comfortable with that aspect of it. But I learned in these two worlds that you use one language when you're talking to the, well, I'll put it this way, you use one language when you're talking to the Greeks, and you use a different language when you speak to the Romans.
I understand you, Ben. Yeah.
And do you know what's so funny, actually, sort of in here, we've done three shows with Sean Gabb, who he's the director of the Libertarian Alliance in the UK, and while we don't agree with all his views, he has so many he's such a unique perspective on everything. And he's one of those guys that he sounds quite posh, you know, because he's quite a, what we consider up here in Scotland, he's kind of Southern England, Kent,
he's quite well-to-do.
Yeah, posh sort of guy. But, like, he'll just throw in references to kinky sex or something like that, you know, and it's just
out of
so
nowhere.
And then they'll talk about bad kinky sex or something, and I'm not trying to do Sean's accent, but it's sort of like that
it's
way.
He's really good, though, but...
Yeah, and I remembered there was a guy I used to know, and I won't say his name on the radio, but he was so posh, but he would swear in these just perfectly timed fashions, and his posh accent, it was so funny.
Wonderful.
Hilarious.
More about Dan's weird friend.
Who sweared at perfectly timed intervals.
On The Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
LRN.FM needs your help getting our satellite signal back on in Africa. Our satellite provider had us on at no charge from 2012 through February of this year when they pulled the channel off the air. Now we're trying to raise $22,000 to continue reaching people with the message of liberty in places where it's needed most. Please visit our Indiegogo fundraiser at africa.lrn.fm. Give what you can and share the link with your friends. africa.lrn.fm.
Freedom Fiend. And what you missed during the break, folks, is we were all telling dog stories. We were talking about dogs.
Yes. Dog tails.
Dog tails. The Greens have a Jack Russell Terrier, which is really smart little dog, very high energy. But Dan, you said yours is getting older, right?
Well, yeah, he's 9 now. He was about the estimated his age when we got him, because we got him from a cat and dog home locally. And he had a terrible fear of men and stuff. When we
men. He hated men.
He wasn't very well adjusted. We've had him now for, about seven years? 7 years he's been with us now. And he's so vibrant, but I've noticed this with Jack Russells. Mm. For example, I know a guy that I work with who said he had a Jack Russell and one lived to 17, which I think is pretty good. And
I have high hopes for our wee doggy. Yeah.
Remember, we were looking at, it was my parents read the Daily Mail. Oh, forgive me.
It's a terrible, my mother terrible reads the Daily rag. Mail.
But anyway, it talked about like one of like Britain's oldest dogs had died.
Well, it was,
and it
Britain's
was a Jack
oldest
Russell.
Dog.
It was Britain's oldest dog, wasn't it? Aye. And it
a
was
Jack
like,
Russell
it
was 21.
Yeah, and the previous dog before that was like 20 odds as well. Yeah,
no, it was like 21 and 25. I think the current one, the one that just died, was like 25.
And it was a Jack Russell also.
But, you know, our dog, I believe, by the way, rescue dogs all the way. You know, I have friends who breed dogs. I just don't agree with it. I think that if there are so many dogs, people don't think that things like puppy farms and puppy mills exist. They really, really do.
Yeah.
And they exist here, they exist in the US, they exist everywhere. And it's awful because, you know, dogs don't, they don't have a voice. I'm talking about cats as well, animals in general. You know, I believe, but I'm not going to get into a big ethical hunting thing, you know, but I'm just saying, you know, dogs are awesome. And if you're considering getting a dog, go rescue all the way, because there's so many dogs that will die in rescue homes because nobody wants them, because people want lap dogs.
Yeah.
Maybe special breeds and stuff. But Dan, I know that you feel about this.
Yeah, no, actually quite strongly, to be honest. Well, do you have something to say, Ben?
Oh, I was just going to say that there's so many myths. I don't know how it is there in Scotland, but here in America, there's so many myths about dogs, you know, that these evil breeds, and this breed has to be outlawed in that breed.
Oh.
And I've always been one of those crazy people that says that there is no such thing as a bad dog. There are only bad dog owners.
Bad owners.
Now, there are...
We absolutely.
Exactly.
A dog is an animal, so it can actually have, you know, mind problems. You can have a dog that... my brother used to have just a beautiful Siberian Husky that in its old age, it was about 17, I think, 16 or 17. And it absolutely went schizo nuts, crazy. And it would bite anybody that got near it. It was just violent. And it had been raised, you know, in a perfect home its whole life. It's just that senility set in. And in its advanced age, it had, if it was a human, it probably would have been diagnosed as having Alzheimer's, because she had, this beautiful dog had wonderful days sometimes when she was, you know, just loving and just wonderful. And then you could see that all of a sudden she wouldn't recognize anybody and she was terrified. Oh. And when that would happen, she was extremely dangerous, because we're talking about like a 100-pound dog. But she wasn't a bad dog. She was a sick dog. And that's a huge difference between those two things. But, yeah, you know, here in America, we have all these silly city councils that are outlawing specific breeds of dogs. And they do that out of fear and ignorance. And that's really all it is. You know, if the dog is a bad dog, it's because the owner has trained it to be a bad dog. Deal with the owner, not the dog. The dog is the victim in this situation. That's my preach on that.
Ben. I completely agree. I've always said there's no bad dogs, just bad owners. And I work as a postman. And again, just a quick libertarian debriefing. Royal Mail is a private company in the
Nobody
UK.
Cares.
I do not work for the government. So just in case. But we had a manager and we had like one of these dog awareness weeks that we do, because I've been bitten by dogs and one of them actually left a scar on my arm. It got me good. But like the manager we had was a dog owner like I am, and he said, look, there is no such thing as a bad dog. It's just, or a bad breed. It's just a bad owner. And I completely agree with that.
Well, the guy's dog, the dog that bit you, Dan, the guy was incredibly casual about the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Quite rude.
I was wearing a fleece and a shirt, and the dog bit a hole right through it and scarred, permanently scarred.
And he went, he'll not go for you.
I think
and you
that,
were like,
yeah, that
rich.
Guy was so weird. He
went, so
I can only apologize. I was like, are you joking?
Yeah.
It's okay.
But I had to go get a shot or something.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Don't let your dog bite the postman.
Treat your dog well and go rescue all the way.
Now, census takers, that's a different thing altogether.
They're evil.
Yes. Release the hounds.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hey, there's some Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
No government funding.
National lottery, that's a, is that a private thing?
So much truth it hurts. Ben Stone back with Katie and Dan Green from, are you guys, is it considered the Highlands or the Moor? You're in Glasgow, so that's down.
We are in a, we're in
central
a city.
Central Scotland, yeah.
Oh,
it's considered central Scotland, yeah. We're not close to the coast so much. We're about like an hour and a half drive away from Edinburgh.
We are city roughly. People. We live in a suburb.
Yeah, what do you call central Scotland? So we're not in the Highlands. We're in the...
Michael likes to say we're not the Moors in the borders of Scotland, either. But really we're not anywhere near.
Well,
Moors.
There is Moors up in Fenwick there. Okay. That's not too far away from us.
We could bus it there. Put it that way. We could take a bus.
Yeah, but you could bus to France from where you're at.
I have done, actually. One time my parents took me on a trip to... My parents were mad Catholics, and they took me on a trip to Rome to see Pope John Paul II give his Easter Mass, and we went on a bus trip, and so we got the bus from Glasgow right down to, like, England, so where the bus gets on the Eurotrain, and it takes you across the channel, and then you get out of France, stay a night in Lyon, you go through Switzerland, and eventually you end up in Italy and Rome. And I've got to say, I have to say this on record, Switzerland has the best service station I've ever seen in my life. You know when you're on like a motorway or a highway, as you guys would call it, and the service stations are usually crap.
There's usually just choice.
It was unbelievable. This was in the Alps, this Swiss service station. Oh no, it was beautiful. And you could order what beef or like chicken you wanted, and you could pick your veg. It was incredible. Okay. I'm sorry, I just... Yeah.
That's okay,
that.
Just chill. You looked really enthusiastic.
Swiss service stations are awesome.
Okay. Well, beef is an exciting thing. I like beef.
Well, yes. Before we were talking previously on the Freedom Fiends, we were talking about sort of dog rescue centers and stuff. They're not, I was saying to Dan that they're not government funded. There's no government sort of intervention. But then they do get money from the lottery, which the national lottery in this country, which is state franchised.
They still are no government
but
funded.
But it's not
though.
Like they have like a wing of like, you know, that's dedicated to...
And that for me is, you know, that kind of thing of like when people say to you, if you come out as an anarchist and they say, oh, well, who'll take care of like the cats and dogs? Some people say that. Well, you go, the SSPCA... In
They're
Scotland and the
it.
RSPCA yeah. in England, all voluntary funds, you know, no government funding. Even the historic buildings, the National Trust in Britain take care of many historic buildings. They have a membership scheme and things like that and have admission to some places.
I know a few people who are members.
Yeah, so they receive no government funding.
At all.
They do it all themselves. So things like that kind of show you don't need the government to fund these things.
You don't need them to do this kind of stuff. Yeah.
There is a demand for example, people to adopt rescue dogs or people to visit stately homes.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a funny thing because people in America tend to think of Europe and specifically England and Scotland as being far more socialist than the government is here in the United States. But in fact,
it is, yeah.
But there are aspects of where the United States government is far more socialist because, you know, just like that, what you're talking about there, the socialist aspects of the U.S. government like to get their tentacles into all of those things. It's just a balance of some things the U.K. government has invaded, some things in the private sector the U.K. government has invaded, but hasn't quite got around to invading other things. And the same way in the U.S., some things the U.S. government has gotten its tentacles into and invaded with socialism, but other things they haven't been able to. So, you know, maybe we have a little bit more leniency towards things like gun ownership here, where you guys are really restrictive there. But but in other ways, you know, like your mail is delivered by a private company, and here the United States Postal Service, in the 1800s, all the way back like 100, 150 years ago, used the aggression of government to keep out competition and keep out private competition, like with Lysander Spooner and so forth.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, because he started a more efficient mail company, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he actually forced the government mail to lower. If you're hearing this at home and you're thinking, like, what's a Lysander Spooner? What's that got to do with that? Well, he set up a private mail company at the time when only the U.S. government controlled the U.S. mail. And mail was really expensive. Your common, average, everyday working person could not afford to mail anything because it was so expensive. And mail was not delivered to homes. Mail was delivered to a central post office, and then you went down there or had your servant person go down there and pick up your mail. And that's how it was done. They didn't have door-to-door mail service. And so Lysander Spooner set up a door-to-door mail service, and he did it at a fraction of the cost so that he was able to undercut the federal government so much in their mail delivery that it forced the United States Mail Service to lower their prices and begin door-to-door mail delivery. And then, of course, then they ran him out of business because they couldn't handle the competition. So that's the whole that's the Lysander Spooner story there.
That's incredible, isn't it?
On a totally side note, I meant to mention this the last time that we were podcasting, or last time we did a Freedom Fiend show together. I wanted to say that, and I started to bring it up again when we were talking about your podcast, the Greening Out podcast that you guys do. But I want to encourage people, if you're listening on the radio and you're like, you know, this is the only thing you hear of this kind of talk, and you're not used to it. You're used to hearing these right-wing radio people or these left-wing radio people or whatever, and you're like, what are these people? There are all kinds of really good podcasts that you can go to their website, download the thing, and listen to it at your leisure when you're commuting in your car to work, or when you're working in your garden, or when you're exercising or whatever. There's so many really good podcasts out there. The Greening Out podcast is a good one. There's, the School Sucks Project is a really good podcast. There's one out of Indianapolis, Indiana called We Are Libertarians. And they're a really good podcast. The Professor CJ, Prof. CJ, has the Dangerous History podcast, and he is really good. Can you guys think of any others that come to mind immediately?
Oh, well, we had James Corbett on our show from the CorbettReport.com.
Yeah, he's great.
It's like, if you want conspiracy, but with evidence and a sort of logic, and a rational approach, then James Corbett is your man for that. I've been listening to one recently called The Partially Examined Life, and it's a collection of people who did philosophy like at college, but then did something else. But they do like specific shows on like maybe specific parts of a philosopher's thinking, you know, and they go right through it, and some of them you pay for and some are free and that kind of thing. But I've been listening to them recently, and they're quite interested. They really go into, and often if they can get the text they're talking about, say it's Descartes' Meditations they're going to talk about, what they'll do is they'll put up where the text is for free so you can read it for yourself and then listen to the podcast and sort of hear
their
views.
We actually have a resources page on the Greening Out podcast. It's greeningoutpodcast.com, and we've got our resources page there, which is, we've different categories, and we actually have like a podcast bit. So for our kind of top ones, that's really where you would find them. I enjoy it. And also Freedom Fiends, I don't listen to live because, most of the time I can't.
You're
really
asleep unless you're on it live.
So mostly
the only times you hear it live is when you're on it live, because those days you've got reserved.
I download that as a podcast, and that's how I listen to the Fiends actually. So.
I listen to a lot when I'm delivering my mail. That's how I kind of came to the conclusions I am. I even go to places like LibriVox.org,
and
you can get free audiobooks read by volunteers, you know, books that are in the public domain. Mm-hmm. And they range from all sorts, from things like, I listen to things like Franz Kafka, you know, and his Metamorphosis.
Well, that's how I came across Anthem by Ayn Rand.
Yeah.
And I remember when I read Anthem, that was my first
forte
into this sort of, I don't know what the right word is. It was just my first.
Not the word objectivist, but we've only read Anthem.
Well, I like her fiction. I'm not. I wouldn't say I agree with her on much else.
No,
I wouldn't say so. I like her fiction, though.
Ayn Rand kind of is a weird thing for people that tend to call themselves libertarians or ANCAPs or voluntarists or whatever, because she was so dead right on a few things and so vastly, stupidly wrong on some things. And also, she's one of these personalities that tends to draw fanatical followers. And so if you point out...
It's a bit culty for me.
Yeah. And so if you point out, you know, oh, well, I like this about her, I like that, what she said, but I don't really agree with that, then they're almost like status. They want to poke your eyes out, or they get angry that you don't agree 100% with everything she said. And that freaks me out. I don't like to be around people like that.
Same.
No, I'm the same. You know, I realized a while ago that I'm not a joiner of anything anymore. You know, like... spiritual groups, political parties, you know, I did it when I was younger, early 20s, you know. And I came to the conclusion that I'm not a joiner of anything anymore.
You can't be. It will offer you no kind of, I mean, it can offer a bit of comfort, I guess, for some people. Some people, I can think of a few people in my life that need that, actually. No, seriously, like there's a few people that I know. And I think if they didn't have their belief system, no matter what I think about it, they would be quite lost, actually. So, but, you know, it is what it is. And like we were saying earlier, we just try and secede as much as we possibly can. And that's what, you know, I would encourage anybody to do.
I think to
try and have no government involvement in your life at all. Just try your very, very best.
You know. I think that's why I'm so comfortable living on the road in an RV, because you know, you're not tied down like if you're in one spot, then people start to tend to say, well, you know, why aren't you attending church, or why aren't you doing this, or why aren't you a member of this club, or why aren't you helping the local blah blah blah. And you know, I really just like the independence of being able to say, well, because I'm not here tomorrow, I'm going to be gone, and, you know, and I might or might not be back, and who knows? It's to me, that's not being tied to any organization or club or, you know, anything like that. It's more for me. I think this is going to sound all hippie, huggy, kissy thing, but for me, it just seems more like the human natural thing to not be tied down like that.
I can understand that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, like being sort of, yeah.
Well, yeah, I can understand that, because the whole thing about freedom is the freedom of movement,
you know,
without
restriction. See, in my sort of late teens, early 20s, I used to read like Jack Kerouac books.
Oh, yes.
You know, particularly like everyone knows On the Road, but he had great ones like The Dharma Bums.
You're such a cliche.
I actually like The Dharma Bums better than I like On the Road. And I've read a lot of Bukowski books as well. And he was he travelled about and stuff. And
he was weird. He was a weird dude.
They were big influences on me.
I know. I've seen your tattoos.
We're going to be right back after this trip to the market with Redemption in the Third Act.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
That's the thing, I hate podcasts that feel structured, that feel like a structured interview.
Do you have bullfrogs in Scotland?
I'm going to say no.
We have frogs, but I'm not sure what a bullfrog is. I don't think they're of the bullfrog variety. I do see frogs a lot.
I see frogs, yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know if anybody else sees frogs. I do. I say frog.
The tendency.
Go
ahead.
No, I'm just making stupid frog jokes. Please, please interrupt me, please.
The here in the U.S., we designate bullfrogs as different from other frogs in the sense that the bullfrog sits and croaks really loud with a deep voice, and that's how they attract mates to each other. And here in the deep south where I'm at, there's a lot of swamplands. Where I'm sitting right now, I'm about, using Eurospeak, I'm about 200 meters from a really dense swamp. So all I have to do, if I take my little dog out to walk, I can, in almost any part of the day, it's in the, well, in the winter you can't do this, but here now in the springtime and as the summer comes on, pretty much any time of the day, and you can hear the big bullfrogs out there in the swamp just brawl, and they almost sound like a dog. You know, they're so big. I refer to it as barking because they're so loud, and I don't know where I was going to take that, but...
I feel it's relevant. I like it.
I might have been.
I enjoy frogs.
I'm not sure where I was going with that, but I might have been referencing the term to, you know, when you get around a bunch of party people, a bullfrog is a person who tends to come in and dominate the conversation, and eventually, as the drinks flow, he starts to sing. That this your typical bullfrog.
It's Jeremiah was.
Yeah,
Jeremiah
Ben, stop
was a bullfrog.
Stop describing me on the radio. It's not funny.
Dan's a bullfrog. I now understand that song on a totally different level. Before, I thought it was just nonsense.
Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Well, he was a good friend of mine, and I didn't understand.
Am I right in saying Creedence Clearwater Revival?
Yeah. I think it was Three Dog Night. Yeah, but as the
I have no idea, but it's a good song.
As the evening progresses and the drinks flow and the happiness comes in, the bullfrogs come out, and I think you know we haven't. This is where I was going with that. We haven't really had one topic, and we didn't really, you know, we weren't negative today. Like, oh, the government's going to kill you. They're going to take away all your stuff and beat you.
And
all that's true. Yes. They are. That's what they do. But
of course, yes.
We've kind of had more of a party attitude and a good conversation, and you know. But I'm not going to start singing. I promise. Because I haven't had enough.
Come
drink.
On, just one.
Well, I'm going to talk before Dan starts singing. Nobody wants it.
Nobody wants it.
No, I think this has been a really nice show. I like to keep it light, conversational. Like we say, we're not trying to fix or take over the world. We just want to be left alone.
Yeah, we started that way. We're like, human freedom is under threat worldwide. And we were so bothered. But then we started realizing that, you know,
it starts
in words I can't say, fudge it. You know,
fudge the whole thing.
Yeah, just fudge the whole thing. Who you know, cares? I like to talk about it. You know, it's funny. Like I mentioned, Sean Gabb, who's the director of the Libertarian Alliance here in the UK, earlier on, and he said before, you know, in some ways I'm freer now than I was in the 70s in Britain. In some ways I'm less free. He said, so why do I bother doing this? And he said, well, it's a kind of hobby.
Yeah.
He said, if I didn't do libertarian, you know.
Media
kind of activism and media and interviews, I'm not sure what else I'd do. I enjoy it, you know, and I agree with him completely.
I think it's good to talk to other like-minded people.
And I'm not bothered about it happening in my time because I know all these old Marxists. I do know a bunch of them.
Yeah, that thought
who are they're really depressed because they thought they were going to see like a Marxist Britain in their lifetime and it never happened, and they're all depressed. I know we're not going to see a libertarian paradise in Britain.
No.
And see, to be perfectly honest, I don't care. I'm still enjoying myself. I've just distanced myself as much as I can, and they can do what they want to do.
And we'll do what we want to do. And that's it. Freedom frogs.
Yeah. Let's not be down about this.
Yeah.
We'll party while they sink the ship.
There you go.
Exactly.
We'll be the band. We'll be the band playing on while the Titanic sinks.
No, don't
sinks.
Be like, that's depressing. You don't want to be the band that goes down with the ship.
Well, what we won't tell them is that we all have life rafts. We just didn't tell anybody about it.
Yeah.
So we'll keep playing and singing and partying and having fun. And when the ship sinks...
And the other people... Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, you know, we'll party on.
Yeah.
And they can sabotage themselves and we'll watch and we'll laugh and go, see?
Saw it in the Soviet Union.
This has been great, Ben. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys.
It's been a lot of fun.
I know.
It has been.
I have fun. That's what I like to do. Long, isn't it?